God says so. He gives a compliment to us. He addresses us as if we were eagles. And if we understand the different characteristics that eagles have, then I think we have a deeper appreciation for our calling, our purpose, our abilities that God has given to us. He wants us to be able to spiritually soar. He wants us to have the courage, the boldness, the power, the intelligence to be able to manage our affairs and to be able to take on future challenges like the tribulation that was alluded to in the earlier message. I'd like for us to turn over to Isaiah 40. Isaiah chapter 40, toward the end of the chapter. We can look and see in verse 28, "Have you not known, have you not seen, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary, and there is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases their strength." In other words, he makes up for what we lack. "Even the youth shall faint and be weary from time to time, and the young men..." Do I lean on or further away? I'll keep a distance here from the mic. And so back to verse 30, "Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, but they that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint." Spiritually speaking, it'd be great to feel strong all of the time, to be able to do the right things all the time because we have a relationship with God. It'd be great if we felt strong and decisive and bold and courageous in a humble way, but in a confident way. And God uses the example of eagles, to that analogy, in order to help us to appreciate their characteristics and consider the fact that we spiritually could emulate the same characteristics. So we're going to look at some of these. One of the things I want to mention immediately is that eagles do not typically flap their wings the way most birds do. If they did that, well, they do that maybe on the surface of the ground, or maybe to get something to eat or to attack prey. But if they were to flap their wings constantly every day, they would die. Because eagles are heavier than other birds. A hummingbird can just be that big and can float in stationary in one spot, just like a bee, a bumblebee. But an eagle can weigh up to 15 or more pounds. It's heavy, and it can't possibly sustain itself. The way eagles navigate is by soaring, not flapping their wings. And they can't just, they don't choose to soar all of the time. If an eagle is starving, it will discipline itself to sit on a ledge maybe for an entire week until the winds are favorable. Eagles depend on what are called wind thermals, that is, updrafts. You can have downdrafts, updrafts of air. And all pilots know that, especially that fly small aircraft. But when you have an updraft of warm air that can arise, then a bird, especially an eagle with its 10-foot wingspan, I'm 6 feet here, another 4 feet, that's how wide an eagle's wings can be. And so that accesses the wind thermal, and those eagles can get up to high altitude. They can go over 10,000 feet. That's as high as a lot of commercial aircraft. And so it's when they have that kind of access that they can fly at speeds of 50 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, 150, and if they're dive bombing, going after a target, up to 200 miles an hour. They're fearless. They're decisive. They can go right through storms. Other birds, no. Other birds will go around as well they should. They don't have the capabilities of an American bald eagle to slice right through a vicious rainstorm, or to have the keen eyesight. I mean, these birds are amazing. They could spot a mouse 2 miles away at 10,000 feet. They have eyesight that we could only dream about. And I'll get into that later. In the book of James, we can read an interesting statement about trials. And a lot of times when we face different difficulties, we can be perplexed, we can be worried, unsure, and very much in doubt as to how the outcome will be. It says in James 1, verse 2, though, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse, various temptations, knowing that this is the trial of your faith with which works patience. And let patience have her perfect work, that you might be perfect entirely, wanting nothing." That's easy to read, but it's hard to do. If you're going through some trial and there's no immediate answer and you may not know who to turn to or what to do or so forth, that, and you might feel alone. You're not alone. John, Hebrews 13, 5, God will not leave nor forsake us. He promises. But we could drift away from him, or we could be unsure about what's around the corner. And it would be analogous to a bird, an eagle, that was panicky and thinking, "I've got to flap my wings. I got to make something happen. I can't sit around and wait for the next wind thermal to come along. I got to act now. I'm worried. What's going to happen? Trials are happening. I can't get it resolved. I want to get it resolved. I can't do it right away, and I'm stuck. It's like I'm in a lonely spot. But I know God is with me." But eagles have to wait things out sometimes. There's a time to act, and then there's a time to wait. And it takes the wisdom to know the difference. There's the standard joke about the flood that came to this one town, and a man was on a roof, and people called out, "Hey, we'll throw you a rope." He says, no, "I'm waiting for God to help me." And somebody comes by with a boat. "Do you want me to help?" "No, God's going to take care of me." And then somebody comes in the helicopter, offers help. "No, no thanks." And then he dies, and in the proverbial story, it's all fiction, he meets his creator who says, and he says to the creator, why didn't you rescue me? I was trusting in you." And the answer, "Well, I sent a boat, I sent, you know, people with ropes, I sent a helicopter, and you turned it down." Well, there are times that we have to take action. There are times that we have to do what we can do. But then there are other situations that arise where it is just out of our reach. It is not the time, and there's a time to wait. And that takes patience. And it takes trust in God. But ultimately, however way we slice it, the just shall live by faith. Most of us would prefer to walk by sight, not by faith. But sometimes we have to exercise the same patience of an eagle, who will sit and wait until the winds are favorable and things work out the way God would steer that. Eagles are absolutely amazing that way. And the fact that they soar is so majestic. And Proverbs 30 is a recognition of that. Proverbs 30 and verse 18 and 19. There are certain things, activities that are amazing within the world of nature. In Proverbs 30 and verse 18, "There are three things which are too wonderful for me. Yes, four that I know not," the writer says. And immediately he goes, "The way of an eagle in the air." The way an eagle soars. The way he uses those winds. And he can fly at tremendous speed and hardly wiggle the wings and just glides at will. It's absolutely amazing to watch. In fact, I have a couple of clips, and let's try the first one from the, it's entitled Queen of the Skies. I did get permission, copyright permission from National Geographic for this. You can see how huge the wingspan is. And this is what a view looks like from an eagle, and this was because a camera was clipped on a wing of an eagle. And you're going at 100 miles an hour across these fjords. And so it's, and there's some wonderful video that's available, even some on YouTube, that where you can just feel like you're soaring in the air. But this is majestic. It's an amazing ability, but the winds have to be right. So let's stop there. move along. So, as I said in the beginning, it would be a sad thing if an eagle did not know it was an eagle. It wouldn't take the advantage of the air to be able to soar and be as majestic as God created it to be. That points out the fact that an eagle will act on God's timing, hence with the wind choice. And we have to act on God's timing. Sometimes there are things that we want, and it's not the right time to receive it. But when the time is right, usually there are so many corroborating coincidences that occur that it just underscores, yes, this was the right time. And it's always good for us to be mindful of asking God, you know, according to your will, according to when the time is right for us. So when we face our trials, we must not flap our wings laboriously. We should have the calm, collective candor of one of these birds that understands nature and works within it. We have to understand our spiritual world and God in it and work within it. Let's move on to a second area, and that is that God occasionally pushes his eaglets, young eagles that are still in development, and we're all still under construction. He pushes his eaglets out of their comfort zone. Oh, can he do that? I think that we've all had that experience. Excuse me. Maybe somebody get me a glass of water. Then I'll not sound so scary. Yeah, thanks. Pushing out of a comfort zone. This is critical when it's time for eagles to learn to fly. When an eaglet is born, it has 10 weeks to develop, and then the parents will push it out of the nest. They won't do that in an uncaring way. In fact, the nurture is so amazing. Thank you. It's so amazing that these birds have such care for their young. Birds of this nature typically live on fresh meat. But in the beginning, they will take some milk and then very soft food. And the parents are so very mindful of that. But within 10 weeks, those little eaglets will have 7,000 feathers each, and they will be capable of flying. And usually the nests are either in trees or they're way high up. You know how much some of these nests weigh? Over a ton. It's over 2,000 pounds. Sometimes trees have collapsed under the weight of some of these. What they will do is start a nest, and the next generation will use it, and then the next generation, and maybe 300 or 400 years of the same family of eagles will be operating on that same nest. And if an eagle decides to start up his own nest, and it's the males that will do that, he'll gather the twigs, build a nest, and then put shiny objects in it, just like the bowerbird, in order to attract a female. And when the female comes, then the two of them fly together in harmony, mimicking the other. And they're checking each other out because they both have to have the same physical stamina. And if that checks out, then they, in many cases, will latch onto each other with their claws, their talons, in which case they become one, and they don't let go, and they go into a death spiral because they're flapping their wings and they're not going anywhere except straight down. And they might do this death spiral for 7,000-8,000 feet until they get near the bottom, and then they split, and then they're, I won't say they're married, they're mated. They are a family, and they're loyal to each other until death, do one part. And to me, that is also an interesting aspect of eagles, that marriage is for life. And their commitment, even though they're birds, is for life. And we live in a throwaway society, and you can't throw away something that's sacred that God has ordained. Very, very serious. I understand there might be some extenuating circumstances, issues of abuse, etc., and those things are taken care of, or at least addressed in counseling and with no abrupt conclusions drawn. But in the main, these birds are very, very dedicated to principle, to each other, and they are amazing to watch when they go into free fall or when they raise their young. When it's time for the eaglets to fly and they show resistance, and believe me, if you were up on a 8,000-foot ledge in the Rocky Mountains and your nest was on the edge, you might want not to be so close to the edge yourself. Or maybe it's just me. But getting the eaglets acclimated to the idea that they're going to fly away, the mother bird will, if it's up on a cliff, will start pushing off different twigs. And so the nest shrinks and shrinks until a few days roll by and there's nothing left. And then it's just that much easier to nudge that little bird off the ledge. And when that happens, sometimes they don't immediately fly. They'll fall 2,000 feet, 3,000 feet, 4,000 feet, 5,000 feet, ready to crash. And then one of the parents flies underneath it and catches it and then takes it up to the top to do it all over again. God has instilled that in them because that's their best opportunity to learn to fly. They have to fly. They have to live on wind in order to survive. God has planted this into their makeup. And they, in doing so, he has to push them out of their comfort zone. Some few eagles will decide that they're capable of flying. Maybe there was enough of a thermal wind that they were flapping their wings and just getting the hang of things, and so they're able to pick up on it. But the eagles are able to do this and not lose a single one. But we get pushed out of our comfort zone, and it's a good thing. It's something that we probably don't welcome, an interruption of life. Why do I have this trial? But it helps make us spiritually stronger in the long run. If there's something that God wants, he doesn't want us to be so complacent that we never change, that we never learn, that we never overcome. That's crazy. We all have things to overcome. We all have improvement we can make. If we're not pushing ourselves hard enough, a loving God may do that. He may correct us. He only does that to those whom he loves, Hebrews 12:6. He's very much interested in our welfare. He makes sure that he won't tempt us above that which we're, or allow temptation above that that we can handle. That's a promise in 1 Corinthians 10:13. We are pilgrims and strangers on this earth. Our citizenship is in heaven. But in spite of that, sometimes we can get lackadaisical, and God will sometimes push us. There was even a book that came out entitled Even an Eagle Needs a Push. But since we're all under construction spiritually, that can't be a surprise. I think we can might have more in common with some of these eaglets that are in free fall than we ever thought about before. But a mother eagle especially will be very, very compassionate in a sense that's or sacrificial in working with the eaglets and stirring the nest. In Deuteronomy 32 is a reinforcement of what we've just looked at and heard regarding being pushed out of a comfort zone. And God understands with us that it's not easy making certain changes, and he very much wants to care and be there for us. In Deuteronomy 32 and verse 11 says, "And an eagle stirs up her nest, flutters over her young, spreading abroad her wings, taking them and bearing them on her wings, especially if they're not at 100%, not quite ready to fly the coop and be independent on their own." And again, she or her mate will dive down and gather the chicks as they fall and bring them to a safe place to try yet again at a later time. I don't know of any other animal species that does anything like that. Sometimes God has kicked us out of a few nests, disrupted our comfort zones, just to see what we might do. And sometimes we can feel very, very alone. Like, this absolutely makes no sense. This picture, would God orchestrate this? Maybe not, but he might allow certain events to occur and say, I'll let that happen. I'll let that happen because in the long run, this is best for all involved, even if it defies common sense. A third area to talk about is the vision of an eagle. I've already mentioned an eagle can spot a mouse 2 miles away as it's flying at 100 miles an hour at the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. An eagle has a wide view. It's 270 degrees. 360 is a complete circle. Not only that, it can easily rotate its head, so it can see everything. But to see it such detail, there was a famous baseball player, Ted Williams, maybe the best hitter in the game, who had outstanding acuity. His eyesight was such that he could almost read a label on a baseball when it was coming at him at 90 miles an hour. Well, eagles can do that. Eagles have extra rods. We have in our human eye rods and cones. The rods help us to see for accuracy. We have about 20,000. An eagle has, 200,000. Eagle has 1 million of those. 4 times the acuity of a human being. And he has an extra set of eyes, in a sense, over his eyes. In a room like this with these little fans going, somebody or 10 people could probably say, well, I'm glad I sat in between the fans because it'll dry out my contacts. Well, eagles flying at, well, if you and I flew at 150 miles an hour, whatever, we'd probably need goggles so our eyes would not dry out. Well, eagles have that ability. As I might have mentioned already, they are fearless. They will go straight through storms that other birds will do anything to avoid. And they have to have very strong eyes to be able to penetrate against all of those winds. And they do. And some of the minute targets that they focus on are even up to 3 miles away. So they have very protective thick lenses. And they can see a fish swimming in a river or a pond from a huge distance and swoop down and determine, I'm going to get it. And every time they do, they have powerful feet or talons, claws, unbelievably strong. Their beaks are strong, 750 pounds per square inch they can exert on anything that they bite. And they're just fascinating to watch. I talked about God pushing eagles out of their comfort zone. At this point, I'd like to go to the American Bald Eagle video, and we'll take a few excerpts of it to see how they construct their abode. And that ties into a proverb, I think it's 27, verse 24, that a person will, in this case, I'll go to that later. Here, they're both building the nest, but if it's a brand new project, it'll be the male by himself that puts that together. And he's only flapping his wings primarily because he's at a low altitude and doing a vital project. But this particular nest is big enough for a human to dwell in. Okay, let's go on to, I've got different time markings, 12-minute mark. If we could do that. That nest is a lot bigger now. They had kept track of this over the course of a year through all the 4 seasons. And you see a fish there, and there are any number of other other bones of prey that they brought back to this area. Yeah, that's one of the bones of one of the animals that they killed. So this nest is enormous, and they do weigh quite a lot. And actually, there's room for, by the time this is done, this nest could hold about three humans instead of two adult and two adult eagles and two eaglets. Okay, let's go to 29 minutes. Now we're getting into the winter time. And there's the offspring. In just 10 weeks, they'll be able to fly all over the place. And yet they don't have a single feather. And so they're helpless. And they need milk in the beginning, but they can't live on milk the rest of their lives. If they did, again, they would die. And I think there's a spiritual connection with us. That's what happens when you don't feed them enough. But they are darling. Let's go to minute mark 41 and 55 seconds. But again, look at that soaring. The wings hardly move at all. When we're in harmony with God, life is so much easier. And we don't have to go through aggravation and be flapping our wings and being frustrated over things. You could feel that he's got it under control, whatever the agenda is for that day. And it's always survival of the fittest. So what he's doing is protecting his territory because he's in a location that is very close to many different food sources. And let me get back to the notes here. So I talked about the ability to catch fish, and at this point, let's go to the feeding frenzy, they call it, which the second half of this is quite interesting. But it's almost like they're all coming down for the fish. You see one that's brought one back to the nest. And they almost never miss when they aim to pick up a fish. And this guy dive bombed and got a fish. There's another one. There's another one. And this is done at 100 miles an hour. You watch this and you say, those fish don't have a chance. So, it's amazing. It's impressive to have the eyesight to know where they are, to see them, and to see them pluck that out. It's just astonishing. Another example of birds on the prowl. And I'll move on with some of these notes. A fourth area to consider is the fact that eagles live on high ground. We are to take the high ground as well. We have to have the high standards of God. It's just the nature of our calling. And with the eagles tend to live alone. I mean, you don't see them intertwined with a number of other animal species. And that's also true for all of us. We may have many connections in society, but we're not influenced by society. We're to be away from that, you know, in the world but not of the world, that our standards, our God standards, sure, we're imperfect, but we try and recognize the fact that we are to try to live by every word of God. And in Romans chapter 12 is an important scripture that shows that we're not like everyone else in the sense that God expects more from us, and we recognize that. In Romans 12 and verse 1, I beseech you therefore, brethren, Romans 12 verse 1, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. True for us all. And be not conformed to this world. It's easier to not be conformed if we're not part and parcel of it, if we can remove ourselves from it, if we don't invite it into our computers and TV sets and radio or any other medium, that we want to follow God and live by his steps, his standards, his commandments, his words. Easy to say, it's more challenging for any of us to do, but it's still always important. Eagles live on high ground, and that's how they can take advantage of opportunities to hunt. Maybe the winds aren't perfect on a day when they could leap off a cliff and dive bomb after something that's important to eat. They do have to take care of themselves. So they live on high ground. Do you know that eagles that weigh 15 pounds can haul off animals that weigh far more than that? We've got proof coming up that that is the case. But one thing that I want to reiterate is that eagles were created to want fresh meat. Now, some scavengers, some predators will actually attack and eat their prey alive. Eagles don't do that. They will wait until the animal has died. But they have to have fresh meat or they will die. Spiritually speaking, we're supposed to want to and aspire to having spiritual meat. We can't just go through pablum. It might be one thing, for example, to determine that the Bible is true. But the next step then is to understand what's in it. And then after that, well, I guess I need to be conforming to that. And then years may go by and you consider other messages. Well, I'm going to take a deeper approach. I not only need to conform to it, it should be from the heart that whether God said, yes, do it or not, that I would want to do it. That I would naturally do it. So there are different degrees, and that comes from having a deeper insight into things. How else can you explain why a Christian can read the Bible and read it maybe through 50 times and keep learning and learning? If you and I read Gone with the Wind 50 times, you might think after time number 7, man, there's nothing left to I know the lines. I know what's going to happen. But with the Bible, it's just endless. It is a special book. It's different. It's amazing. That's where we can derive meat. Now, sad to say, I've known of some people that said, yeah, we need more meat. We just need more meat. And what that meant was I got some secret beliefs that I want to share with people that are not, may not be out of the Bible, but they're, you know, something that I've concocted. I'm being very disparaging, I guess, in this way, but I'm not talking about esoteric secret knowledge. Depth of understanding and meat of the word can be over very fundamental topics, but we see them more deeply, we see more applications of them, and so we have a bigger insight as Christians into what God explains through the words of the Bible, which are very living. With that in mind, let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 3, 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Where it says, Paul, in frustration, I'll start in verse 1. I, brethren, cannot speak unto you as spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as to babes in Christ. I don't think that applies to us, but it has to some of God's people in past centuries, where they just didn't grow spiritually. They didn't take the time to grow. Verse 2, "For I have fed you with milk and not with meat. For hereto you were not able to bear it, and now you're not even able." So the people limited themselves in that regard. And Paul also addressed the same issue over with the book of Hebrews in chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12. So I'll read that, and you can turn there if you wish. You probably are familiar with having heard this. Verse 12, for the time that you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be of the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong milk, of strong meat. So everyone that uses milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong and meat belongs to them that are full of age, even by those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern between both good and evil. So we can appreciate meat, but eagles, absolutely, they have to have the meat or they die. There's no two ways about it. So we want to be able to do that. And eagles will go to great lengths to make that happen. They're driven to do that. You might look at the animal kingdom and say, well, why is there such a pecking order? Why do animals attack each other? So forth. Well, God has allowed it for probably more reasons than we know. But at least part of the reason is that the species would always exist. If everything was so complacent, then these birds, reptiles, or whatever animal you're talking about, would become so complacent, would be so underdeveloped that they could disappear altogether. God is, his wisdom is beyond finding out, in a sense. So he knows so much more about what's appropriate than we do. I'm prefacing the next video with these statements because what we'll see next is the hunting prowess of an eagle and what it's like when it decides to go after something. And maybe it's miles away, as we'll see in this case. And it comes, let's go to the one of the eagle and the goat. Perfect eyesight, the eagle knows exactly what to do. And these guys know it's time to clear out. And here he comes, 100, 150 miles an hour. Incredible eyesight. He's on the prowl. That's the distance he's covered. There's his victim. There he goes. Unfortunately, this happens. This is what life is like at 8,000 feet up. And he's just settled down to his happy meal. Here's another attack. So this is not just some accident. This happens as often as it needs to. This is what they do for fresh meat. It helps when the winds are favorable. He doesn't have to move his wing hardly at all. They've been known to pull crocodiles out of ponds. He knows exactly what he's doing. Now, if it was an eaglet falling, he would probably sweep under it and protect it. This is pretty serious. That's what he needs to do to stay alive. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you desire spiritual meat to the same intensity level as that eagle? Do we think, man, I have got to have a relationship with God. I've got to be praying. I've got to be putting enough time in. I need to be studying. I need to get to know God in a deeper way to the same level of intensity as these animals that think, if I don't eat, I die. And so it is that they pursue with a incredible devotion. There is something that's unique about these birds also. I've already touched on a little bit the talons, the claws that they have. You know, they to be able to lift these other animals, they're much, much heavier. They have to be able to have a grip that you wouldn't believe. And that reminds me of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 21. I'll turn there. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21. Here it says, prove all things, hold fast to that which is good. The English words hold fast is translated from a Greek word, takeo. Takeo means not just to hold fast, but to grip with vengeance. Grip so hard that your hands lock on and you would never be able to let it go. I might have used this example before, but there were two men that ran a mail route. They flew a prop plane from Boston, Massachusetts up to Lewiston, Maine every night at midnight. And one night when they were making the routine run, somebody forgot to shut the back door to the small aircraft. And so when they were up in the air at about 10,000 feet, they both heard this irritating flapping going on. And so the co-pilot said, well, I'll go back and check it out. So when he went back, there was because the back door was unlocked, it was flapping, there was a suction, and he almost went out of the plane. But just as most of his body had gone out, he latched onto a metal bar right there at the end of the plane. And most of his body was outside, and so he was flapping. His body was flapping like it was a flag in the wind. And it was in January, and it was frigid out, especially at that altitude. And so his friend was still flying the plane, and he called into Lewiston. He said, we're coming in as scheduled, but my partner may be hanging onto the back of the plane. I can't walk away from the steering wheel and look all the way back there. But please, I'm asking for medical help, emergency fire trucks, everything when we land. And so he was hoping his buddy was still there and not knowing how precarious it was. So here the personnel were lined up on the runway. Here this plane came in for a landing, and they see this poor hapless guy waving in the wind in the back of the plane, and this thing comes now finally to a halt, and the person hanging on could at least stand on the runway, but he couldn't let go. He couldn't let go. And they tried to ask him, but his grip had spasmed, and then he continued to lock on so hard to save his life, and they asked the people with the fire trucks to come over and take crowbars and pry his fingers off of that metal bar one by one. He had takeoed. He had grabbed on so hard that he wouldn't let go. When eagles hunt, they almost never drop their prey, unless it's on purpose. Sometimes they can play a little frolicsome games. We may see a little of that at the end. But basically, when they latch on, it's for keeps. It doesn't matter if it's a crocodile, a mountain goat, a vulture, or any other animal. It's for keeps. There's a tone of finality to it. As I've suggested already, another area, if eagles are fearless and decisive. Okay, I think this is a feeding frenzy where they're pulling out fish left and right here. You see how high up they are when they come down to pick off something. See how they pass it off one to another? Some people say they're playing rugby and others maybe basketball. That's the weave, you know, coming down the court. Nothing gets lost. No wasted food, no wasted motion. Now that wasn't very nice. You saw how the two latched onto each other. That reminds me of the death spiral. With such effortless flight. They are fearless. They are decisive. It's good for us to consider that. Paul was talking to Timothy at one point, trying to stir him up. He said, God's spirit is not of timidity. You know, it's of power and a sound mind. Eagles are fearless. Brings to mind a statement that Nelson Mandela made. He was the president of South Africa at one point. He said that acting decisively is not the absence of fear, but the determination to face it and overcome it. And so, eagles demonstrate that quality very prominently. Another thing about eagles is that they have contrasting color. They're easy to identify. So much of the animal kingdom has camouflage for its own self-defense. But an eagle is different. Other animals know if an eagle is present. Have that dark brown and then the white top. We have contrasting color, in a sense, as Christians. And people may not know exactly who we are, but may say, there's something different about that person or those people. Or they'll say, we are really glad you came here for your, Feast of Tabernacles. You're wonderful to work with, and we don't know why, but we know there's something different. We've had people make statements like that about us. I can remember one person at the college and the faculty working with some amazing athletes, and one of them finally said, Harry, I want what you have. You haven't explained it to me, but I want what you have. Sometimes we can be very, very positive examples. On other situations, we may represent a standard of life that others are not sold on. They may want to take issue with some of our choices. I've talked about some of the prisoners that we've had that are baptized, that are in prison, and they are not running to the same excess of riot as other people in the facilities. They're different. And in order to be a member of God's church, you really have to be different. You have to make choices. And in prison especially, but it's true so much in society, that people feel that they need to be part of something, to have an identity somewhere just for self-preservation. So if it's in prison, they're going to join the Cribs or the L.A. Kings or some other gang or one of the 600 or I don't know how many religions that they try to accommodate there. And some of the beliefs may be admirable and some are pretty unusual. And yet everybody wants to be a part of something. They don't want to be alone. People sometimes will do things in a crowd that they would never do alone. But when you have contrasting shades of color, you stand out if you're an animal. And spiritually speaking, if we're close to God, people will be impressed with that, or they may feel intimidated, like, wow, you're making me look bad. And so we will make an impression. But that's the way God expected it to be. He expects us to make a positive impression, or at least represent Him. And eagles do that without even thinking. A final area, and I've already touched on this, eagles are loyal to their marriage covenant. And we are married to Christ. Betrothed to Christ. And it says in Revelation 19 and verse 7 that the wife will make herself ready. But that is very, very much a significant part of our relationship with God. It's intimate. It's not like, oh, we're so detached and he's this undefined, amorphous being. We're kind of ethereal. No, it's a specific connection that we have, a covenant with the Almighty God, and that we will be part of His government, and that we will be the wife of Jesus Christ. So let me summarize these things, because we've seen quite a bit. It's true that it would be a tragedy if an eagle never recognized that he or she was an eagle. Especially spiritually speaking, we're not just adrift aimlessly as a group of individuals. We are called by God. We're betrothed to Christ. We are part of the covenant process by which we spiritually are aligned with God and His principles. And if we follow the example of the eagles that we've seen, we're going to want to soar. We're going to be able to access the thermal winds that an eagle is smart enough to utilize. We're going to take time and be patient until those opportunities arise. And then use our wingspans in order to ride on those currents. And there's no wasted motion when you do that. There are some people that are just full of frenetic activity and they worry themselves sick and then there's nothing left. An eagle has a majestic poise, and he or she takes care of business in a very dignified way and is not caught up and encumbered in a lot of frenetic activity. We've seen that. We've seen when eagles take advantage of the winds to soar. We've seen that the vision of an eagle is highly significant. I should quote Proverbs 29, verse 18. Where there is no vision, the people fail. But where there is vision, foresight, the people prosper spiritually. That vision not only extends to outwardly to see what's going on in the world, but inwardly we are admonished to watch, pray always, that our flight will be not in the Sabbath day, and that we'll be able to stand before the Son of God. God pushes eaglets out of their comfort zones. He's pushed you and I out of a few and probably will. He's not done pushing us as we are here today. Eagles live on high ground. Eagles thrive on fresh meat. They can't live on pablum or they will die. Eagles have contrasting color, and eagles are very loyal creatures. To me, it's inspiring to see that God would take such a majestic creation like an eagle and say that, well, that's part of what you do. You manifest those traits, or all of us. That's a special compliment and one that has an eternal future. Let's be glad that we have the opportunities that we have to be understanding of God's way of life, the fact that we're on a spiritual journey, that we're still in development, we're still under construction, that there is rhyme and reason even to the difficulties that we may face when other people couldn't explain it, why whatsoever, that we can understand that it is true. Why don't we end this in Isaiah 40, where we began, Isaiah 40, in verse 29. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases their strength. We've all been there, I think, at one time or another. Maybe wrestling with health issues now, or other things that may be intimidating to us. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, people of all ages perhaps. But it's temporary, and they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength and shall mount with the wings of an eagle. We see what the wings of an eagle can do. We see what kind of a species they are and how marvelous they are. Let us be like the eagles and anticipate God's help in steering us that way, that we shall walk and we shall not faint.